Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 143, being recorded on the 7th of September, 2016, with special guest Ning Kuang. I'm Sujit, based out of New Jersey. We have Evan, based out of North Carolina, and Ning, all the way from Shanghai. So really appreciate her taking the time to join us today to talk about an interesting topic, Cloud Foundry, and we'll get into the nitty-gritties of that in just a minute. But as usual, let's get started with some updates in the Azure space. And I think, Evan, you had put something in there for the UK region. That's a big one this week, I think. Can you dive into that?
Yeah, it's been a little quiet recently, right? It's the I saw somebody call it the unofficial, countrywide holiday, in August in the U.S. where, unlike the U.K. where they kind of officially take a lot of that time. No, I'm sorry, unlike in Europe where they officially take a lot of the time off, we just duck out here in the U.S. But we just announced that both the U.K. South and U.K. West are generally available. At this point, that's going to, really open up some avenues for customers who, for reasons, compliance reasons or regulatory reasons, right, want their data to sit in the UK but still want to leverage Azure at that point. And I think we're actually going to call it the UK geo maybe, but yeah, it's two new regions and they're now GA at this point. And they should start showing up, I think, in the next day or so in the pricing and that kind of stuff as well. But, it's a nice step forward. We now have got, what's the number, over 34 different regions announced
right. Worldwide.
It's an amazing number, given it's only been, relatively speaking, not many years.
And I think, as you said, the importance is that, so I guess some customers that have this requirement of data residency, data residing in the UK itself, can now get unblocked. And I think, if I remember reading the blog article, it's kind of helps a lot of the local government based organizations that have this requirement more than anybody else. So I think some of the government orgs are the first ones to sign on, actually, and they're hoping that they can move to the cloud now that they have a local data center right there.
Yeah, and they're not. I'm pretty sure that about Canada, and I know for sure about Germany. But we're doing a similar. We've got a region in preview in Germany, right, and then we've got a couple of regions in Canada, which. I think they're GA, but don't quote me on it. They might still be preview. And then we've got some DOD, Department of Defense in the U.S. specific regions. And this is all kind of what you're talking about, right? A lot of the, governments and other organizations have requirements to say that the data or the resources have to exist within the, geographic region owned by that, or covered by that entity, right? U.S. government data has to sit in the U.S. German government type data has to sit in Germany. And these are servicing that need. So yeah, I think the government is kind of the primary focus. But I know that there are, end customers that have similar regulatory or compliance reasons, right, that they want to leverage as well.
Yeah, and Evan, as you said, it's been a quiet week for a change, kind of like an unofficial holiday around here. I was scouring other news items. There's some other minor news items, but this was the major one that was worth talking about.
Yeah,
and the only one we're talking about this week. So that was kind of odd, but let's then jump straight to our special guest today, Ning. Would you mind giving our listeners a quick introduction about your background and what you do at Microsoft and the group that you work for?
Hi, thank you for having me here. I'm the program manager from the Enterprise Open Source Group. And our group has been working on Linux-related projects for a long time. And our mission is to make Linux the first-class citizen on Azure, on Hyper-V. We have been focusing on Linux and open source product development. That includes core Linux and FreeBSD OS development, third-party open source applications, and middleware on Linux VM, or the same thing running on Windows. So Cloud Foundry is one of the typical projects we were working on.
So that sounds like you know, such cool stuff. I mean, I think on the show we've often talked about how Microsoft is trying to reinvent itself, change itself, you know, especially as it adopts some of these open source technologies. But what you're describing is almost like complete embracing of open source technology. So give us a feel for what, you know, what, like how long did it take us to get to this point, you know, where we're like almost where we treat like Linux and Windows literally as, you know, as you said, first class citizens, both on the same level.
Yes, this really comes a long way. Actually, I remember one of our top Linux expert developer, KY, he started to contribute to Linux kernel code from 2009. However, this is still not the earliest effort. The first open source project for Microsoft is released at 2004. I think that was a tool set called Windows Installer XML, and it's the first one released under an open source license. That was 12 years ago. I think the biggest shift happened about 1.5 years ago, where Satya declared that Microsoft loves Linux. So that is the big shift. And since then, we have celebrated a lot of great milestones, like HD Insight on Linux, SQL Server on Linux, Visual Studio, and PowerShell for Linux support.
And this kind of goes, you know, kind of to Sajid's point, right? This goes even further in the sense of we're working on SQL Server on Linux. You know, we released, I can't remember if PowerShell's in preview or GA for Linux, but you know, we've got PowerShell for Linux, we've got .NET Core for Linux, right? So it's this is really becoming this blended. Everything we do, you know, kind of crosses Windows Linux boundaries, and it's, I mean, it'll be interesting to see in a couple of years kind of how you tell the difference, right? I suspect you won't be able to much. You'll just use whatever you want to use, and your OS is just whatever OS you happen to have.
Yes, it's part of the normal life now. Remember when Satya declared that Microsoft loves Linux? At that time, 20% of Azure Cloud were on Linux, and now 40%. So for customer, this is just a normal scenario, and same for engineering team. When we are planning a new product, we are responsible, and we have to have the same priority for both Windows and Linux story.
I'm glad sorry, Evan, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can speak from personal experience. I've helped at least one customer do a major deployment, Cloud Foundry deployment on Azure. You know, so this was a, you know, a large customer of ours, you know, and this was, I don't know if they were in production yet with this workload, but they were certainly testing to move to production. So yeah, this is not just a theoretical, right? Customers are actually doing this.
Yeah.
So, now, Ning and I know Evan, you guys probably are very, very comfortable and know exactly what Cloud Foundry is. I seem to be the one person here, and I think Kale also joined us. So thanks for joining us, Kale. Can you just give us a quick background on what Cloud Foundry is? What problem does it solve, and why would somebody want to run it in Azure?
There's a famous developer statement that reflects what problem Cloud Foundry solves. He said, "Here's my source code. Run it for me. I don't care how." So developer wants to focus on coding. He wishes someone else would take care of the rest of the work, deploying and managing applications. That's the problem Cloud Foundry solves. Cloud Foundry is a PaaS platform for cloud applications. It enables developers to quickly build, stage, deploy, and publish the applications. It runs on cloud's IaaS platform. So customers want it to run on Azure so they can take advantage of Azure's IaaS platform and its major functionalities, which we can talk in details later.
So then, you know, kind of expanding on that, Ning, so Cloud Foundry, so the in Azure, right, or we abstract the kind of physical layer of things from customers, the physical network, the physical servers, and they're layering their application on top of that. Cloud Foundry, we put it, you're saying we put it in the middle between those so that you don't even have to know that you're running on Azure, you're just developing against Cloud Foundry, and this could be Azure, it could be AWS. So does it support other cloud platforms as well?
Yes, Cloud Foundry is an open cloud. As a matter of fact, this is actually a benefit of it. It supports multiple platforms like public and private, AWS, Google, OpenStack, vSphere. And furthermore, although underlying IaaS platform is different, the interface to the developers is the same. They use the same set of command line tools across all the platforms. And for the applications, the application can run the same way and is portable too.
Hey Ning, I had a couple questions. This is Kale. On when we're running Cloud Foundry, like on top of Azure, just like ACS kind of thing, that there's been some things like we have the Azure Container Service, which basically allows like kind of deeper integration. Like you could just take Docker and run it on top of Azure, and spin up the VMs yourself and kind of manage that. From a Cloud Foundry perspective, is there any kind of integration at all to the underlying infrastructure, or is it built in such a way that it just handles all the fault tolerance? So if, for instance, we patch a VM or something, or we take like a hypervisor down and one of the virtual machines has to reboot, would it automatically kind of handle that for the user? Or?
Yes, there is an abstraction. When the Cloud Foundry operator is deploying and manage this infrastructure, he does not directly deal with the underlying IaaS platform. He mainly uses a tool called Bosch. And Bosch interface with underlying platform through so-called cloud provider interface, the CPI. And that's why CPI is the major engineering piece to enable a cloud provider. Azure CPI calls Azure Resources Manager to manage underlying VMs.
That's interesting. I didn't know it actually had like they used to call it a CPI to be able to talk to Azure. That's kind of cool. I thought it was more of you stand up some VMs and then lay this on top of it, but it sounds like it has a little bit deeper integration than that.
Yes, the major cloud-specific functionalities are done by CPI. This includes VM management, storage, networking. So CPI makes sure the cloud Foundry operators management tool can be cloud independent and consistent across different clouds too.
But that's a good question that Kale asked is, so just as, like, just suppose one of the VMs, one of the IaaS VMs has to be restarted, you know, and I'm assuming it's all part of a fault domain or something like that. If that does happen, is a Cloud Foundry made aware of that, and does it then take some action to rebalance, you know, to move some of those workloads elsewhere? What does it do?
Cloud Foundry is managed and deployed by Bosch. Bosch can monitor each VM at runtime, and if Bosch detects that a certain VM is not responding, he will remove that VM and it will create the same one too with the same functionality to replace it.
Got it.
So, right. So when, and you know, maybe I don't know if you can speak to this, but you know, at some point somebody had to decide we want Cloud Foundry to work on Azure, right, or work with Azure. Is that something that we, Microsoft, said, okay, we want this to happen, so we went and, you know, contributed code or Is there a Cloud Foundry organization that, somebody that manages it, kind of, even though it's open source, that worked with us to do this? Like, can you speak to kind of how it got here?
That's a good question. Cloud Foundry is it's an open source project, and it is driven by Cloud Foundry Foundation, and thousands of developers are working on this. Customers love Cloud Foundry. They love it for multiple reasons. They want to consolidate their app platforms, or they want to shift to the new modern agile developing culture. Or they already have Cloud Foundry on-prem workload and they want to extend to Azure. So they come to us. They want it on Azure. And community also started the initial code for CPI. That's how it starts with Microsoft.
So, I mean, how long did this take for us to? I mean, I'm sure this isn't something we did over the course of a week, right? But I mean, is this something we've been working on for a long time, or is this kind of like a 6 month thing, adventure that we embarked on, or?
Actually, we GA'd November last year, and then we started the work probably about a year ago before that. To enable the end-to-end experience, we need not only the CPI, or we also need to test end-to-end, provide a template to simplify the initial bootstrapping and guidance end-to-end for help customer to set it up.
That's not bad for something that scale, right? I mean, a year really is not that long at that point.
So
Cool.
that's what the OSG did, the open source group, the group that you're a part of. Was that built by your team?
That's one of
Did
the
this.
projects we are working on. We are also partner with Azure team for the Azure integration, DX team for the Pivotal partnership, which we'll cover later. And there is an internal community with CAD team supporting account team to support a broad range of customers.
Okay. Now, Ning, you mentioned earlier that one of the tenets of Cloud Foundry is that a developer just said, "Here's my source code, go run it for me." All right. How does a developer write this code? What kind of code, like what kind of languages, frameworks, etc., can they use to write this code that runs in Cloud Foundry?
Cloud Foundry supports a broad range of languages like Java, Python, PHP, Go, and it is also easily extensible. If your favorite language is not supported, you can create a custom build pack and then it will be integrated and supported. One thing worth mentioning here is .NET. There are two stack here. One is the Linux stack. That for ASP.NET Core that runs on Ubuntu, it just works as any other normal Linux stack. On the other hand, the Windows stack, that is a little bit tricky because it requires Cloud Foundry to support Windows VM and also have dependency on Garden Windows.
Sorry, go ahead,
I
Emma.
was just going to say, I just want to make, I want to go back on that and just make sure that the audience kind of caught that. We Microsoft, right, the .NET and Windows, behemoth that we were years ago, everything's working but .NET. Well, I mean, it's sort of working, but that's like the last thing we added. And if that isn't an indication of kind of the huge shift that we've done internally, I don't know what else is.
Yes, I know. This is pretty normal for open source project. The Linux workloads always come first. And we are okay. We embrace this trend because customer needs always comes first.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, and maybe you covered this, but one question I had, Ning, was this seems portable, like we talked about, right? So you could say, hey, it's cloud portable as long as the cloud provider has implemented it, so Amazon, Azure, whatnot. What about on premises? Sorry, Evan.
I
On premises.
So the Cloud Foundry is well supported on private and public cloud. And for us, the closest one is the Azure Stack. So now we are working on enabling Cloud Foundry on the Azure Stack.
That would make sense. Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it's something you could run on bare metal. Like if you just had a bunch of servers in your data center and you could say, hey, let's port it over to Cloud Foundry and then maybe move it to the cloud, or if that's it doesn't work like that.
So you're asking, Kale, kind of, is there like a Cloud Foundry runtime underneath that you could put if you don't have Azure Stack or Azure or
Correct.
something like that?
Yeah.
Yes, regarding bare metal, currently there are some effort in the community to enable Cloud Foundry on bare metal, although that is not a focus for us yet. But we are open. We are watching the trend, and we'll see how that goes with our customers.
So what's next for Cloud Foundry in terms of integration with Azure? Are there some other things you're working on in terms of integrating better with our tools, Visual Studio, Open System Center, et cetera? Any plans in that area?
Yeah,
Yeah, and
sure.
remember, Ning, this does go out publicly, so don't give away all of our secrets.
True, that
Yeah, we have enough thing to tell to customer. And
Okay.
yeah, we have a lot excited deliverables coming in next 6 months. The first I should mention about Pivotal. Pivotal is a commercial company that have the enterprise support and management tool UI support for Cloud Foundry. A lot of our enterprise customers wanted to use Pivotal to deploy and manage Cloud Foundry on Azure. So we are working with them to enable Pivotal Cloud Foundry on Azure, or called PCF on Azure. That's already in preview, and so we are working towards the PCF GA on Azure. The second project is further integration with Azure. We just mentioned about the API that enable Cloud Foundry to run on the IaaS platform. However, Cloud Foundry have a lot more integration point for the clouds. Service Broker enable you to utilize the PaaS service of the cloud. For example, using the Azure Blob Storage, using Azure SQL DB to integrate with any cloud application running on CF. But furthermore, for Cloud Foundry infrastructure itself, Cloud Foundry also provide the mechanism to utilize the cloud component to enhance the Cloud Foundry infrastructure. For example, we can use Azure AD for the authentication. We can use the application gateway for the networking, and we can use OMS for monitoring and the logging. So there are a lot of more enhancement utilize Azure features. And the third is to enable on more platforms, for example, Azure Stack and the government cloud.
Nice.
But that's
Now,
cool.
so the, I as you said, this all works on Linux VMs essentially, right? Cloud Foundry.
Yes, we are also working on enable this on Windows VM.
So I was so hoping you said that you would say that.
Yeah, that's
So
also
that's
one
great.
of the big action.
That's great. This really shows, I think, at least. Not just, we're not paying just lip service to working with the open source community and Linux. I think we're doing some very real work to make this happen. So really, it's really nice to hear the work that your team is doing, really appreciate all those efforts. Is there any other like tips that you want to share with people that want to use Cloud Foundry, say, on Azure? Is that something they should be concerned about, be careful about, or is it just, does it just work like they don't have to worry about anything, it just use the open the tools, the command line interfaces, and it should just work.
Yes, For open source Cloud Foundry, you can always start with our end-to-end guidance from GitHub, which I can share the link later. And if it is your first time, we recommend you using our Bosch ARM template, which will quickly help you set up the environment. You can always communicate issues, comments through GitHub.
Is this something too that's in the marketplace, Ning, where they can just go in and click through it that way, or do they have to go through GitHub?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I should mention that too. So for marketplace, we do have a template. That's the Pivotal Cloud Foundry template. So anyone who want to try the Pivotal, the PCF, you can start with the marketplace template.
Yeah. So is there a, oh, I'm sorry, Kel, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if when they use the templates, does that, is some of the parameters, not to get into the weeds there a little bit, but like the high availability aspects of it, does that kind of accommodate for it? So if you take the ARM template and say, I want to spin this up, it will spin up a HA type scenario for you, like automatically give you the multiple nodes underneath that's going to handle those kind of failures and stuff?
Yes, there are several ways to run a template. For starter, you can start with the single VM deployment where the entire framework is in one VM. And furthermore, you can set up multiple VM deployment where each node is on its own VM. And of course, you can also set up cluster for important nodes or even all nodes. By specifying the configurations in a YAML file.
Awesome. That's cool.
This has been great, Ning. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about Cloud Foundry and how we're working with Azure, how it works with Azure, and the work that your group is doing. So it's a really good insight into all the efforts from there. Any other questions for Ning, guys?
No, thank you very much, Ning.
Thanks, Ning.
Yep, thank All you. Right. We're looking forward to working with our customers and also the open source community to deliver deeper integration and more features for Cloud Foundry and other open source projects.
Looking forward to it.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.